But she hadn't called him Reacher on the mobile. He had clicked the button and said hello, and she had said, "Hi, Jack." It went off in his ear like a siren. Then she had asked, "Where are you?" And she had sounded so tense about it, he panicked and his mind started racing, and for a second he missed exactly what she meant. His given name, just a lucky chance, "Hi, Jack," meant, "Hi, Jack." It took him a second to catch on. She was in trouble. Big trouble. But she was still Leon's daughter. Smart enough to think hard and warn him with two little syllables at the start of a desperate phone call. Hijack. An alert. A combat warning. He blinked once and crushed down the fear and went to work. First thing he did was lie to her. Combat is about time and space and opposing forces, like a huge four-dimensional diagram. First step is misinform the enemy. Let him think your diagram is a completely different shape. You assume all communications are penetrated, and then you use them to spread lies and deceit. You buy yourself an advantage. He wasn't in St. Louis. Why should he be? Why fly himself all the way down there when there were telephones in the world, and he'd already built a working relationship with Conrad? He called him from the Greenwich Avenue sidewalk and told him what he needed, and Conrad called back just 3 minutes later because the file in question was right there in the A's section nearest the harassed runner's desk. He listened with the pedestrians swirling around him, and Conrad read the file aloud, and 12 minutes later he clicked the phone off with all the information he was ever going to need. Then he hustled the Lincoln south on 7th and dumped it in a garage a block north of the Twin Towers. He hurried down and crossed the plaza, and he was already inside the South Tower's lobby when Jody called. Just 88 floors below her. He was talking to the security guy at the desk, which was the voice she heard in the background. His face went blank with panic, and he clicked the phone off and took the express elevator to 89. He stepped out and breathed hard and forced himself to calm down. Stay calm and plan. His guess was 89 would be laid out the same as 88. It was quiet and empty. Corridors ran around the elevator cores, narrow, lit by bulbs in the ceiling. There were doors opening into the individual office suites. They had rectangular wired glass portholes set off center at a short person's eye level. Each suite door had a metal plate listing the name of the occupant and a buzzer to press for entry. He found the fire stairs and ran down one level. The stairwell was utilitarian, no finesse in the decor, just plain, dusty concrete with metal handrails. Behind every fire door was an extinguisher. Above the extinguisher was a bright red cabinet with a red-painted axe clipped into place behind glass. On the wall next to the cabinet was a giant stencil in red marking the floor number. He came out into the 88th floor corridor. It was equally quiet. Identical narrow width, identical lighting, same layout, same doors. He ran the wrong way and came around to CCT last. It had a light oak door with a brass plate next to it and a brass push button for the buzzer. He pulled the door, gently. It was locked tight. He stooped and looked in through the wired glass porthole. He saw a reception area, bright lights, brass and oak decor, a counter to his right, another door straight ahead. That door was shut, and the reception area was deserted. He stood and stared straight through at the closed inner door and felt panic rising in his throat. She was in there. She was in the inner office. He could feel it. She was in there, alone, a prisoner, and she needed him. She was in there, and he should be in there with her. He should have gone with her. He stooped down and put his forehead against the cold glass and stared through at the office door. Then he heard Leon in his head, starting up with another of his golden rules. Don't worry about why it went wrong, just damn well put it right. He stepped back and glanced left and right along the corridor, put himself underneath the light nearest the door, reached up and unscrewed the bulb until it went out. The hot glass burned his fingers. He winced and stepped back to the door and checked again, a yard from the porthole, well out in the corridor. The reception area was brightly lit and the corridor was now dark. He could see in, but nobody would see out. You can see from a dark place into a light place, but you can't see from a light place into a dark place. A crucial difference. He stood and waited. The inner door opened and a thick-set guy stepped out of the office into reception, closed the door gently behind him. A thick-set guy in a dark suit. The guy he'd pushed down the stairs in the Key West bar. The guy who had fired the Beretta up in Garrison. The guy who had clung to the Bravada's door handle. He walked through reception and disappeared from view. Reacher stepped forward again and studied the inner door through the glass. It stayed closed. He knocked gently on the outer door. The guy came to the porthole and peered through. Reacher stood up straight and turned his shoulders so his brown jacket filled the view. UPS, he said softly. It was an office building, and it was dark, and it was a brown jacket, and the guy opened the door. Reacher stepped around the arc of its swing and shot his hand in and caught the guy by the throat. Do it fast enough and hard enough, and you numb the guy's voice box before he can get going with any sounds. Then you dig your fingers in and keep him from falling over. The guy went heavy against his grip, and Reacher ran him all the way along the corridor to the fire door and threw him backward into the stairwell. The guy bounced off the far wall and went down on the concrete with a cracked, rasping sound coming from his throat. "Time to choose," Reacher whispered. "You help me or you die." A choice like that, there's only one sensible thing to do, but the guy didn't do it. He struggled up to his knees and made like he was going to fight it out. Reacher tapped him on the top of the head, just enough to send some shock down through his neck bones, and then stepped back and asked him again. "Help me out," he said, "or I'll kill you." The guy shook his head to clear it and launched himself across the floor. Reacher heard Leon say, "Ask once, ask twice if you must, but for God's sake don't ask three times." He kicked the guy in the chest and spun him around backward and wedged his forearm across the top of his shoulders and put a hand under his chin and wrenched it once and broke his neck. One down, but he was down without releasing any information, and in combat, information is king. His gut still told him this was a small operation, but two guys or three or five could equally be called small, and there was a hell of a big difference between going in blind against two or three or five opponents. He paused in the stairwell and glanced at the fire axe in the red cabinet. Next best thing to solid information is some kind of an arresting diversion. Something to make them worried and unsettled. Something to make them pause. He did it as quietly as he could and checked the corridor was truly empty before dragging the body back. He swung the door open soundlessly and got the guy arranged in the middle of the lobby floor. Then he closed the door again and dodged down behind the reception counter. It was chest high and more than 10 feet long. He lay on the floor beside it and eased the silent stire out of his jacket and settled down to wait. It felt like a long wait. He was pressed to the thin office carpet and he could feel the unyielding concrete under it, alive with the tiny vibrations of a giant building at work. He could feel the faint bass shudder of the elevators stopping and starting. He could feel the tingle of the tension in their cables. He could hear the hum of air conditioning and the tremor of the wind. He hooked his toes back against the resistance of the nylon pile and bunched his legs against them, ready for action. He felt the fall of footsteps a second before he heard the click of the latch. He knew the inner door had opened because he heard the change in the acoustic. The reception area was suddenly open to a larger space. He heard 4 feet on the carpet and he heard them stop, like he knew they would. He waited. Present somebody with an astonishing sight and it takes about 3 seconds for the maximum effect to develop. That was Reacher's experience. They look at it, they see it, their brain rejects it, their eyes bounce it back again, and it sinks in. 3 whole seconds, beginning to end. He counted silently. 1, 2... 3, and pushed out at the base of the counter, pressed to the floor, leading with the long black silencer on the end of the stryer. He got his arms out, then his shoulders, then his eyes. What he saw was a disaster. The guy with the hook and the burned face was dropping a weapon and gasping and clutching at the doorframe, but he was on the wrong side of Jody, the far side. He was on Jody's right, and the reception counter was on her left. She was a foot nearer than he was. She was much shorter, but Reacher was down on the floor, looking up at an angle that put her head directly in front of his head, her body directly in front of his body. There was no clear shot. No clear shot anywhere. Jody was in the way. The guy with the hook in the face was making sounds in his throat, and Jody was staring down at the floor. Then there was a second guy behind him in the open doorway, the Suburban driver. He stopped behind Jody's shoulder and stared. He was carrying a Beretta in his right hand. He stared forward and down at the floor, and then he stepped alongside Jody and pushed his way past her. He stepped a yard into the room. He stepped into clear air. Reacher squeezed the trigger. 14 whole pounds of pressure, and the silencer banged loud, and the guy's face blew apart. It took the 9mm bullet in the exact center and exploded. Blood and bone hit the ceiling and sprayed the far wall behind him. Jody froze in direct line with the guy with the hook, and the guy with the hook was very fast, faster than he should have been for a crippled 50-year-old. He went one way with his left arm and scooped the shotgun off the floor. He went the other way with his right arm and folded it around Jody's waist. The steel hook was bright against her suit. He was moving her before the other guy had even hit the floor. He clamped his right arm hard around her and lifted her off her feet and dragged her backward. The crash of the shot from the stryer was still rumbling. "How many?" Reacher screamed. She was as fast as Leon ever was. "Two down, one up," she screamed back. So the guy with the hook was the only one. But he was already swinging the shotgun around. It arced up through the air, and he used the momentum to crunch the pump. Reacher was caught half-exposed, low down, scrambling out from behind the counter. It was only a fractional opportunity, but the guy went right ahead and took it. He fired low, and the gun flashed and boomed, and the reception counter splintered into 10,000 pieces. Reacher ducked his head, but sharp needles of wood and metal and hot stray pellets smashed him in the side of the face like a blow from a sledgehammer, all the way from his cheek to his forehead. He felt the dull crump and the sharp, agonizing sting of serious injury. It was like falling from a window and hitting the ground head first. He rolled up, dazed, and the guy was hauling Jody backward through the doorway, crunching the pump once more against the shotgun's weight as it moved. Reacher was dull and motionless against the back wall, and the muzzle was coming up on him. His forehead was numb and icy. There was terrible pain there. He raised the stryer. The silencer pointed straight at Jody. He jerked it a fraction left and right. It still pointed at Jody. The guy was making himself small behind her. He was craning around with his left hand, leveling the shotgun. His finger was tightening on the trigger. Reacher was immobile against the wall. He stared at Jody, fixing her face in his mind before he died. Then a fair-haired woman was suddenly behind her, shouldering desperately into the guy's back, pushing him off balance. He staggered and whirled and clubbed at her with the shotgun barrel. Reacher caught a glimpse of a pink dress as she went down. Then the shotgun was swinging back towards him, but Jody was bouncing and wrestling against the guy's arm. She was stamping and kicking. The guy was staggering around against her energy. He blundered with her all the way back out into the reception area and tripped against the Suburban driver's legs. He fell with Jody, and the shotgun fired against the corpse. There was deafening sound and smoke and the obscene bloom and spray of dead blood and tissue. The guy came up on his knees, and Reacher tracked him all the way with the stryer. The guy dropped the shotgun and went for his pocket and came back with a shiny, short-barreled revolver. He thumbed the hammer. The click was loud. Jody was heaving left and right against his arm, tight around her waist. Left and right, furiously, randomly. Reacher had no clear shot. Blood was pouring into his left eye. His forehead was pounding and bleeding. He closed the useless eye against the wetness and squinted with the right. The shiny revolver came all the way up and jammed hard into Jody's side. She gasped and stopped moving, and the guy's face came out from behind her head, smiling savagely. "Drop the gun, asshole," he panted. Reacher kept the stire exactly where it was. One eye open, one eye closed. Jagged bolts of pain hammering in his head. The length of the silencer trained on the guy's distorted grin.
I'll shoot her!
The guy snarled.
Then I'll shoot you, Reacher said. She dies, you die.
The guy stared. Then he nodded.
Impasse,
he said.